private study at the police camp, with a muslin bedsheet between his body and the ground. When the body was arranged with his hands folded across his chest, the jailer ushered everyone from the room and pulled the door closed, causing the hallway to shiver. The interior walls of the jailer's house were made of patterned calico that had been stretched tight and tacked to the building's frame, and when the timber creaked in the wind, or was disturbed by a heavy footfall or the sudden slam of a door, the walls all quivered and rippled like the surface of a pool, so that, watching them tremble, one could not help but call to mind that 2-inch space between the doubled cloth, that dead space around the framing, full of dust, and patterned by the moving shadows of the bodies in the room beyond. "Someone has to stay with him," Taufari insisted. Wells could not be left alone, lying on the floor, without even a flame burning in the room, with no one to watch over him, touch him, pray over him, pray for him, or sing. Taufari tried to explain the principles of the Tangi, but they weren't principles, they were rights, too sacred for explanation, too sacred even to defend. They were simply the way things ought to be done, must be done. "A spirit has not fully departed until the body is interred," he said. "There are songs and prayers." The jailer reprimanded him, calling him a heathen. Taufari became angry. "Somebody has to stay with him until the burial," he said. "I will stay with him until the burial. Crosby Wells was my friend and my brother." "Crosby Wells," the jailer returned, "was a white man, and unless a passing shadow has deceived me, certainly no brother of yours. The funeral will be on Tuesday morning. If you want to make yourself useful, you can lend a hand to the digging of his grave." But Taufari stayed. He kept vigil on the porch, and then in the garden, and then in the alley between the jailer's cottage and the camp, and from each station he was chased away. At last, the jailer emerged from the jailhouse with a long-handed pistol in his hand. He would shoot Taufari if he saw him within 50 yards of the camp at any hour before the moment Crosby Wells' body was lowered into the ground, so help him God, he said. So Taufari backed up 50 paces, counting the steps, and sat down against the wooden façade of the Grey and Buller Bank. From this distance he watched over his old friend's body, and spoke beloved words for him, on the final night before his spirit sailed away.
"When Crosby died," said Taufari, "I was in the Arahura."
"You were in the valley," said Balfour. "You were there when he died?"
"I was sitting a trap for Kereru," said Taufari. "Do you know Kereru?"
"Some kind of bird, is it?"
"Yes. Very tasty. Good for stewing."
"All right." Balfour's derby hat had begun to drip. He took it off and banged it against his leg. Already his suit had darkened from grey to a sodden charcoal. His shirt had become translucent, showing through it the pink of his skin.
"I sit the trap before nightfall, to catch the birds in the morning," Taufari said. "From the ridge you can see Crosby's house, from above. That night 4 men went in."
"Four?" said Balfour, replacing his hat. "You don't mean 3. 1 man on a black stallion, very tall. 2 other men with him, shorter, both on bay mares. That's Alistair Lauderback, and Jock and Augustus. The man who found his body, you know, who alerted the police."
"I saw 3 men on horseback, yes," said Taufari, nodding slowly. "But before they arrived, I saw 1 man on foot."
"One man alone? Well, you're all right, aren't you, Ted?" said Balfour, suddenly very excited. "Yes, by golly, you're all right."
"I was not alarmed," Taufari continued, "because I did not know that Crosby Wells died that night. I did not know he was dead until the morning."
"One man entering the cottage alone," said Balfour. He began to pace. "And before Lauderback arrives."
"Do you wish to know his name?"
Balfour wheeled on his foot.
"You know who it was?"
He was almost shouting.
"Yes, good Lord, tell me."
"We will trade," said Taufari immediately. "I will set my price. You will count her." £1.
Trade? Said Balfour.
£1, said Taufali.
Hang tight, said Balfour. You saw a man go into Wells Cottage on the day of his death, the very day of his death, 2 weeks ago. You really saw somebody do that? And you know, without a shadow of a doubt, who that man was?
I know the name, said Taufali. I know the man. No cheating.
No cheating, agreed Balfour. But before I pay, I want to make sure that you do really know him, you see. I want to make sure you're not taking me for a ride. Big man, was it? Very dark hair.
Taufali folded his arms. Fair play, he said. No cheating.
Of course it's fair play, said Balfour. Of course it is.
We will trade. I have set my price at £1. Now you counter.
Heavy? Was he heavy? Thick set? I'm just making sure, you see. I'm making sure you're on the level. Then I'll start trading. You might be cheating me.
£1, said Taufali stubbornly.
It was Francis Carver, wasn't it, Ted? Isn't that right? It was Francis Carver, the sea captain? Captain Carver?
Balfour was guessing, but it was a good guess. A wounded look passed over Taufari's face, and he exhaled audibly.
I said no cheating, he said, in a tone of reproof.
I wasn't cheating, Ted, said Balfour. I just knew it already, you see. I'd only forgotten. Of course, Carver made a trip up to Crosby Wells Cottage that day. That was him, wasn't it? Captain Carver, the man you saw. You can tell me. It's not a secret, because I already know.
He searched the man's face, making sure. Taufari's jaw was rigidly set. Under his breath, he muttered,
Kite tuo hukoi, me maunga tete.
Well, Ted, you've done me a damned good turn here, and I won't forget it, said Balfour.
By now he was thoroughly saturated.
And you know, if I ever need something done, I'll come to you, won't I? And you'll get your coin some other way.
Taufari lifted his chin.
You need Maori, he said.
He did not phrase it as a question.
You need Maori. You come to me. I do not do odd jobs. But you need language, and I will teach you many things.
He did not mention that his skill was as a carver. He had never sold Paunamu. He would not sell Paunamu, for one could not put a price upon a treasure, just as one could not purchase mana, and one could not